Hello and welcome to another edition of A Kaleidoscope. This is Magda Zenon recording in a very hot Nicosia, and with me I have two awesome women that also happen to be friends. I've got Metani Bieri, who's a molecular biologist, and I have also Ipek Borman, who's an international relations expert. These two women discuss with us a process that they went through of trying to engage civil society in finding a solution for the Cyprus problem. Because unless civil society gets involved actively and consciously, we can have the politicians going backwards and forwards and not really listening to what we want. So, Metani, I will throw the microphone to you and tell us a little bit about the process.
Sure. So, first of all, thank you very much, Magda, for having us. It's a pleasure to be here. So let me tell you a few things about how I got involved in this process. At the beginning, I wasn't sure what it was all about, and then realized that this was a process that involved a very diverse group of people. So I'm not sure if I was called in because I was a molecular biologist, but the idea was to have a diverse group, as diverse as possible. So it included people from... let me say a few things. So they were academics, lawyers,
business people.
Definitely business people. We were very important to say that it was a very gender balanced though group. Yeah, so that was very important. The age range was from 20s all the way to 60s. So again, very diverse, coming from the whole of society. So with different ideologies. From different political opinions, could say from the left to the right, and people didn't belong to parties. We also had not only Greek Cypriots, Turkey Cypriots, but people that were in religious minorities. So we had Maronites, we had a priest. So it was all very, very diverse. And that was organized to be this way. So this wasn't random at all. People were selected exactly to be as representative as possible, as you can, because we were just 36 people, but as representative as we could of the Cypriot society. Not the usual suspects, but people that were interested to get involved in this process. Now,
can I just interrupt you? I remember having a conversation with you when we launched a big conference on women's participation in the peace process.
Yes.
Okay. And you were called upon to report on your group. And your question to me was, but Magda, am I qualified to do this? And I said to you, do you breathe? Do you live here? And yes, you qualified. Okay. So we had this thing about, am I qualified and why did they need you? They needed you all because you were all human beings living within this community.
That's a very good point, because I have to say, yes. So I think in this particular case, and I will say a few things about the process, you don't want people that were, as I said, the usual suspects. You didn't want people that have been implicated in processes like this in the past. You needed exactly what you said, people that live in Cyprus, as diverse as possible, that plan to live in the island and would like to help, I guess, to be implicated in the process. So... the idea of these 36 people we got together for a total of 10 days outside Cyprus and in Cyprus. We met and we discussed, we had conversations in order to create stories about the future, possible futures of Cyprus. And when I say possible, I mean, the idea wasn't to create stories about how we desire the future to be. Or our fears about the future, not that. These were included in the process, but in fact, we needed to create scenarios that were realistic, so things that could happen. And scenarios as in stories, and as a biologist, I should say that why stories? Because, well, as humans, we love stories, and we evolved around campfires telling stories to each other. We are the only animal that tells stories. So stories are a very, very powerful tool. And this is what we wanted to create. This is what we created. In the end of this 10-day process, we came up with four scenarios of the futures, of the future, possible future in Cyprus. The stories could have been 10, they could have been 20, they could have been 1,000, it doesn't matter. We just draw an arbitrary line on four of these possible scenarios, and we have to tell you that there were other scenarios put on the table, but in the end we didn't continue with them because we didn't think, after the discussions and the conversations, we didn't think that these were realistic enough. Very important, in this exercise, we had a timeline of 10 years. So when we say future, it could be, you know, what's going to happen to Cyprus in 1,000 years from now? You know, destroyed. Nothing will be here. It's just going to be a rock. But our time frame was until 2035. So all the conversations and the discussions were, you know, where are we going to be in 2035? In this island.
Do we need to add that this was a process that was organized by Rio's Partners? That's an international NGO supported by PRIO, yes, and the Norwegian government and the Irish, the Dutch government. But they were just facilitators of the process. They weren't part of the process, if I'm to understand correctly. They just organized the meeting, put down the processes, and allowed the editing to happen from... So they were just the facilitators of the process. Okay.
Exactly.
Ipek, do you want to pick up? And ladies, when you're not speaking, please mute yourself. It helps with the sound. Ipek, do you want to pick it up from there? Tell me a little bit more about how easy this process was.
This was, you know, it was a very intense process, let me say. I personally, as you mentioned, I'm an international relations expert, and I got personally involved in comprehensive negotiations in the past as a member, core member of the Turkish Cypriot negotiation team. So at one point, for example, I felt that I was like reliving the negotiation process. It was so much, so intense that. There were some, you know, periods where we got divided along ethnic lines. There were some periods where, you know, we didn't have such an ethnic division in our discussions. You know, Turkish Cypriots and Greek Cypriots were like negotiating about or questioning the plausibility of a certain scenario together. It was, as the name suggested, truly transformative for me personally. As I said, even though I was involved in the past in the formal negotiations, you know, having such an intense informal discussion with regard to the Cyprus problem, but not only the Cyprus problem. We talked about, you know, the future of the economy, the future of the environment, the future of certain groups, prospects for the young people, about, you know, women, women's initiatives, women's rights, and all that stuff. So we basically, you know, talked about the future of our island, our common homeland. So it was very personal for each one of us, and because, you know, it was about, okay. So it was about...
I will
it was
about, go back to... Okay.
Sorry? Yes, please? Okay. So it was about the future...
No, no, carry on. Carry on.
...of our country. So therefore, I mean, yes, it was a very challenging, but a positively challenging one, I think, transformative for each one of us, because I personally had some breakthroughs. I also saw my Greek Cypriot friends going through some breakthroughs. I remember a friend who had never crossed to the north before this initiative started. And, you know, one day she called us and told us that, you know, she did cross eventually. And it was a very, you know, emotional, emotional experience for her. So we had these kinds of, you know, personal experiences, the breakthroughs at the same time. And I realized that, you know, dialogue is everything. I mean, when people talk to each other, most of the people there I didn't know before. So it was really a unique experience. I mean, coming together with this diverse group of Cypriots, hearing their stories, hearing where they come from, hearing their ideas and how they want to contribute to the future of their country, of this island, and trying to empathize, you know, with one another. It was a totally unique experience, I would say.
Before we jump into the types of scenarios that you will describe briefly, I want to ask Mitani, did you change in the process?
Oh, yes. So as Ipek said, for me, it was also, I think you used the best word, it was a breakthrough. It was this process made me realize something. The fact, you know, we've all... In my life, I always heard about these slogans and these labels. Yes, we don't forget, this, that. They really polarize people. But when I met with this group of 36 Cypriots, I realized how complex things are and how much depth there is in things that we just create a slogan out there and throw it. And we know how rich our education system is, especially... or at least in the South, I know of these slogans. But then when you actually meet the people and you see the perspectives and you see how complicated and how many things are out there, really, you realize how empty these slogans are. Anyway, so for me, this was one of the most interesting and strong experiences in my life. And I will only tell you this, I then came down and I did this calculation saying, okay, there were 36 of us there. What's the population of Cyprus? What, is it like 1 million people over the age of 18? Can we do, so if it's 40 people per team, can we do 25,000 scenario teams? Then we will solve the Cyprus problem. If we can get people the way these 36 people got together and spend these days and talk to each other, if we could do that, we're not a big place. If we could do that, you know, for the entire population, this would be one very good opportunity of solving
this. Well, one of the things we've often suggested in these discussions, and it's similar but not similar, is town halls, is actually having with each community someone that can answer questions, but people from the community coming and asking real questions and having a real discussion. But the Irish did it, I think. The Irish did it quite broadly. To me, this broad conversation has never happened in Cyprus.
In Cyprus, we have taboo issues as well.
Oh, absolutely.
We were able to discuss taboos, yeah? We were able to discuss why some scenarios are probably not plausible, but they were out there in the light.
I mean, we know from the Annan Plan, and especially in the South, how popular were you after the Annan Plan when people knew you had voted yes? And even though you said it, you weren't very popular. Anyway, let's jump into the processes. Ipek, I'll throw the mic back to you because you're a little bit more familiar with him, but not
Of course. Just a general idea. So as Mitani explained, you know, we were able to come up with a set of four different scenarios at the end. And as she also very correctly stated, these scenarios were not pre-designed. They organically came out of the conversations. We had the four scenarios The first one, we called it Norway scenario. It's a scenario of stagnation and inaction, actually. So it's like the continuation of the status quo. But of course, doing nothing. Not something static. It continues to evolve. And most of the time, you know, as the status quo continues in the much worse direction. So we see that in this scenario, the Cyprus problem gradually deteriorates, also the relationship between the two communities continue to drift further apart. Our second scenario is the world of my way. It's a scenario of divergence and opposition. As we can get an idea, you know, from the name of it, each side continues to pursue its own policies, deriving from their own interests and priorities, and they do not prioritize any kind of you know, improvement in the relations between the two sides or between the two communities. And in fact, in this world, the Cyprus problem escalates because in this scenario, for example, Turkish Cypriots with the intent on breaking out of their long-standing isolation, they no longer hold out for an agreed settlement of the Cyprus problem and actively pursue international engagement and recognition as an independent state. So this, of course, prompts a strong resistance and reaction from the Greek Cypriot side. So under these circumstances, we see each side prioritizing their own interests, prioritizing their own perspectives, disregarding the others. The EU, for example, starts to disengage from the Turkish Cypriot community. The UN starts to disband its mission of good offices in Cyprus. So we have a future where the Cyprus problem escalates. In the third scenario, which we called it the world of their way, it's a scenario of peace. We see that two sides come into terms with one another and are able to agree on a peace settlement, but it's a peace under pressure, actually, mostly, you know, motivated by the external actors and external factors. So when the two Cypriot sides are pressured by external forces here, a federation is established, but it's a top-down process and fails to engage communities for changes ahead. And of course, this without good civic participation and without much knowledge of what kind of federation the two leaders were going to set, cracks soon emerge. Upon the establishment of the federation, the economic integration proves challenging and the leaders experience competing loyalties. So it results in a kind of a dispensation that reinforces mistrust, and the new federation has little capacity to handle stress because, there are inconclusive debates at the federal level, and there is little public faith in the federation, and people's loyalties continue to stay at the constituent state level. So the Cyprus problem gets settled on the surface, only on the surface, And because it has not been transformed, of course, it soon starts to crack down. Yeah. And our fourth scenario is the world of other way. It's a scenario of resilient peace. So here, compared to the previous scenario, we still have some pressure and motivation from the external actors, of course, to solve the Cyprus problem. But also there is pressure from within the societies, within the communities, and there is a high degree of civic participation, civil society inclusion, working groups, technical committees, you know, also actively are very much active at the same level with a, you know, high level peace talks. And in the result, we have a federation where attention is devoted to developing effective, legitimate and resilient public institutions at all levels. And there are mechanisms for coordination, participatory governance, protection of vulnerable communities and social cohesion. So at the end, the Cyprus problem itself gets transformed.
It all sounds very interesting, okay? And this, all these processes have now been put online and into a booklet. What is the intention from there? Because the whole idea is to get people to start talking. And I know this is why I'm doing the podcast, because you need the conversation. How are you going to get the people to start talking? And I know it's a challenge because you've got a civil society that is not easy to get involved unless you're talking to the usual suspects again. And that is not what we want. We know what we want. How are you going to get all other people involved? Who wants to speak? Mitali, do you want to start?
Yeah, I can say, yeah, exactly. So it's like writing a book, but then if you keep it in the drawer, nothing's going to happen. It has to come out, because the whole point of this exercise, which I want to say also at the beginning, I forgot to say, is that the idea is that you talk about the future in order to shake up people to make informed decisions today. So this is the whole idea that, you know, if you show people the future, then maybe today they will start discussing it and then, you know, realize. Because as Ipek said, I think, you know, the first scenario is all about the status quo. We think that everything's static. We don't like change. We don't want change to happen. It's convenient for us. But change does happen without you making decisions. So it's still the river that's running.
Sorry to interrupt you. I think that's an illusion that most separates have, that we're okay and nothing's going to change. But while they're saying it, things are actually changing. They don't realize.
It's a passive. Yeah. Yes. We're in a passive situation where the future comes passively. Mm. Whereas these scenarios, as you said, are very important to come out in the civil society, create a conversation in order to really have an effect for us to make informed decisions. How are we going to do that? Well, yes, thank you, Magda, very much for giving us the microphone to talk here. I know a lot of people from the group of 36 try to do how to, you know, go out and speak. They're having some events. Ipek would be the best to talk to you about this. So she has taken part in, I think.
What about you with your students? You've got a lot of students at your university.
Yes. Actually, informing students is something it's a very good idea. Imagine getting into a human anatomy class and say, well, let's talk about Cyprus today. But in fact, yes, it is a good idea. It's not a bad idea.
You can actually do it, say, you know what, we'll discuss the human anatomy now, but afterwards, stay behind for half an hour to discuss where this human anatomy is going to be, because there's a context at this human anatomy. Because, and I'm not trying to put you on the spot, or maybe I am, but you already got questioning adults, young adults around you, which is a very fertile ground to actually take the conversation. Yes. So there's one idea. And you don't have to make it formal. You don't have to say, I'm inviting you for. You can just call people and say, I've got something I want to talk. And because they like you, and I'm assuming they like you, they'll come and listen.
Think about that's a grade, idea. An extra grade, whoever listens, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
What do you say about the distribution?
We always thought that while we were, you know, writing the scenarios, because, you know, the process of writing the scenarios was also intense, as, you know, we had 36 people trying to collectively write, rewrite, edit, you know, and try to finish the editing. So it was also a very, you know, challenging process.
I think you saw the one in Geneva that I also saw.
Yes, so there was a Geneva launch event, there was a London briefing, there have been a few online launch events.
I went to the one at Lydra Palace. Mm-hmm. That was really good. And the conversation starts, and I mean, I'm playing not the devil advocate, but because you've all spent a lot of time. We need to all collectively find a way to put these stories out there. And it's not put the stories out there, tell people that this is not, read this and tell me what you think, because it's not, you don't need to believe it. What does it generate in you? What ideas does it generate in you?
Yeah, so I think what you said is really important. These were plausible stories that, as I said, it doesn't have to be what you want it to be. It's just things that could happen. So this is another powerful tool here in this process that, you know, those 36 people, when they got together, we didn't have to agree on the scenarios. So we didn't go there to solve the Cyprus problem, obviously. We could agree to disagree, and that was very important during the process.
So the whole idea was that you had to agree that it was a possibility, but exactly. You didn't have to agree mm-hmm. that to the specific possibility.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That was the point.
Okay.
And maybe it's also important to say that these scenarios are very detailed. So imagine something like 10 pages for each.
Okay. I've been at the sideline of the process from the beginning. I can't read all the details of each scenario. I read the synopsis. I've got ADD. I think that's what people need to understand, that exactly. as long as you've got the synopsis.
And that's why we also wanted to give them some catchy titles. Yes. So the No Way World, or the My Way, Their Way, or Our Way, to try to kind of get the essence from the title.
You've been in the process, and could you tell me, have you had questions about the process, about the scenarios? You've had conversations, I'm assuming. What are the most usual questions you've had in regard to the process and the scenarios?
Okay, so who chose you? Why you? Who are these people that went there? Who's funding this? And it's very important, I think, for this process to be very transparent concerning funding and where the funds come in. So,
why we need to say you were all volunteers.
Yes, okay. We're all volunteers.
You're all volunteers, but someone did facilitate the process. The communication is a challenge. Communicating this beyond your circle is a challenge. How can we all help? And we've given Mitani one idea already. What other things can we do? What other things? Because I really enjoyed that event you had at Lydra Palace.
Yes, it was a very good event, really. I mean, it was a chance for us to explain the process, explain the aim of this of these scenarios work to other civil society organizations, initiatives, and activists who are willing to get involved in bicommunal activities, you know, to bring the two communities closer, actually, to open up a space for dialogue. Actually, that is the whole aim, to open up a space for dialogue, to kind of motivate people to think about their future. So I think...
No, I'm not trying to put you on the spot. It's a challenge. I know it's a challenge.
Yeah, we are trying. But as you said, you know, this process was facilitated by Reos Partners. So they are an independent professional social enterprise who had their own methodology, of course, and we were applying that methodology as well. So their presence was was very helpful in the sense that, because, you know, each one of us We are, you know, professionals trying to cope up with, you know, daily life, daily work, challenges, family and all that. But when our facilitators were, they designed the process, they facilitated our meetings, they facilitated our writing process and all that. So with the help of them, we were good. But now, of course, one of us has to take up the responsibility and own the initiative. And as you said, you know, both informally and formally, we should be trying, yeah, exactly, to reach out to the people. I mean, the gist of it is to be able to reach out to Cypriots and to make them realize that the choices they make today, their actions and inactions of today will actually create a future. So what we call as a future is not something that is generated automatically, or it's not an out there reality. I mean, it's a continuation of our actions or inactions or choices. So people need to realize that they actually have the power to change things. And I think here in Cyprus, on both sides, we somehow lost that feeling that people have the ability to force change or to lead change.
Can I interrupt you there? I'm wondering if we ever had that ability. And I'm not being disparaging, because we've been a colony, okay?
We've been a colony, right.
With it. So you've always had someone above you making decisions on your behalf. I wasn't being derogatory. I think it's a fact that as a colony, you assume someone else is making decisions for you. And we've never taken our power back.
Yes, maybe this process helps people to realize that, yes, this has been the case so far. And now, even though we are late, but at least now we, you know, can be aware of our ability to force change. So even if in that sense, you know, we help people or we trigger people's thoughts, ideas, discussions, you know, to think about the future, then it's a gain for us. So as you said, because each one of us, we are professionals, we are volunteers in this process, but, you know, we are thoughtful of what's ahead. You know, we are thoughtful of the future of the, you know, generations to come, the future of our children. I mean, not only in terms of a political solution, but also in terms of, for example, what kind of physical environment they are going to live. How will climate change affect them? So,
can I interrupt you?
Yes, please.
I think our biggest problem is, biggest challenge is that we don't believe our voice is worthwhile. So we always believe someone knows better. And I'm talking generally. So you also think no one's going to listen to you. So Turkish Cypriot civil society is slightly more vibrant than the Greek Cypriot. And I think it's because of circumstances. But I think it's a case of who's going to listen to me if I say something. And the whole point with these scenarios is the more people that are speaking from the ground, they will have to listen. So you need, if you actually need to get heard, you need that critical mass, and maybe this is a way forward. Mitani, you wanted to say something?
Oh, yeah. So I was going to say that politicians match usually what the voters want, right? The clients want. So if they did, this exercise manages to reach as many people as possible and create a conversation, then that will be a wave, in a way, that will go bottom up and will reach the politicians as well. But yes, you're absolutely right. We think that, I think most of us just get absorbed in our daily lives. We've been so disappointed in the past. I know I have been with, you know, the Crans Montana and this and that and everything failing again and again. So yes, we are, I think as a Cypriots, we live in this beautiful place, but we're unlucky in a way. We've been unlucky with our history and our choices and the things that have happened. And I think we we do feel helpless in a way. I keep hearing that, you know, whatever we do, it doesn't matter. It's all, you know, whatever they bring to us kind of thing. So I think we are in this mentality that nothing we do matters in a way, nothing we want, or so we're just wasting our time. So we might as well not do anything.
How are we desperate because I'm, you both young, you've got little kids, I'm slightly older, but we need, how we can improve the world for ourselves and for our children. I get angry and I don't know how to change that because I get really angry when I often see spoken online, people just agreeing with politicians or making one comment on Twitter and then disappearing, not following through, not making our politicians accountable. Because if they carry on doing what they're doing because no one's challenging them. And some of them get voted in and you wonder why, but that's another story. How are we going to change that mentality of my voice counts?
I think it's, I mean, I know this is the long term, but maybe the very powerful tool, and that's education. I mean, I think the younger generation needs to learn that their voice counts. I think that's, but it's, that's long term, right?
And maybe people need to see that, you know, everyday life is about politics and they need to be, you know, politically engaged. I'm not saying this in the sense that, you know, we should all be politicians of some sort. I mean, but to stay politically active, as Magda said, to keep you know, those who hold the power accountable, and to remind them that they serve for the people, actually. They are there for the people and by the people. So maybe it sounds like a cliche, but yes, because of our historical background, probably. I mean, we need to learn how to be politicized, you know, to politicize issues, to open up political spaces for every aspect of the life and make people politically active in that sense, especially the young generations, because we see some kind of apathy, you know, in the young people, especially when it comes to politics, and they see politics as a bad thing. Most people, you know, see politics as a bad thing. Actually, politics is not a bad thing. It's a tool that should be utilized, you know, to make things better.
And politics is everything we do. So when you go and you get bad service at a government department and you don't get done what you want, it took my son 4 years to get his permanent residence. He's been here since he was five. He's a Greek citizen. So when things don't work and you fight or battle to get one, that's political. Doesn't mean I belong to a party. I'm a politician. I think that's what a lot of us don't realize. Our every move is political. The minute you're active within the community, small or big, it's, you're political. Carry it through. Focus through. Because that's the only way it's going to happen. Because I look at our leadership, all of them, and I despair. And not only locally. I despair. I look at the international community. Nothing. These people, things are happening on the ground. What do they care? The Palestinians are getting murdered. The Yemenis are starving. The Syrians are still refugees. And I mean, I can carry on and on and on. No one cares unless they're making a buck. Need to find a way. We need to find a way to challenge the politicians. I keep on, I mean, they all know me with my Palestinian issues. And always, I'm tagging Biden and Harris and Guterres.
Magda, we have the representatives we deserve.
And I agree.
This is who we are.
And we believe. Yeah. And we believe them. They make us, what you call it, promises, and we believe them, and then they don't come through, and you don't challenge them. I mean, I'll give you a small example, and this is a little one. I mean, Christodoulidis promised us a 50-50 ministerial council, okay? He promised it. He wasn't even one that said, the other said 30 aiming for 50. He promised 50. He didn't deliver 50. What did people do? And I'm talking about the most simple of promises. What did he do? Oh, next time. No one actually reacted aggressively or with oomph or with passion. So we need to find out, we need to get people to find their mojo, their passion.
This is very interesting exercise. Definitely. They sometimes do in, I know in my son's school, he's, you know, 10 years old, send a letter to the prime minister or to the president. So they get the kids to send, to actually write a letter about an issue, the environment, this, that. I think it's a very simple but very important exercise at that age. Even if it's, you know, in fantasy for now, but it gives them, I think, an idea for the future.
Do the letters go to the president or do they just do this as an exercise in class?
For now. But yes, if they start writing the letters, why not later on realize that they could also send it? There has been things in the past where people send letters and things happen. Not very often, but sometimes.
I think that's a great idea, getting the kids to... And to write letters of what they would ask the... I did an interview 2 weeks ago with a young woman, and I said to her, what would you ask of the president? And she said to me, to tell the truth.
Truth.
Tell the truth and be accountable. And I thought, okay, that's a good one.
They're facts, and then they're alternative facts, Magda.
Yes. A parallel universe, being living in parallel universe. So how are we going to try and... We've got a 5 or 20 minutes. What can we do to take this, to try and start these conversations? Because I think we're all equally desperate that something moves, something, there's a grey of hope in what we see in front of us. What can we do?
Let me just say that this process, the transformative scenario process that this 36 secrets went through, is something that hasn't happened before. I'm actually surprised how, you know, it took us so long to do something like this in Cyprus with this issue. So I think it was a very, very good idea. And I'm really grateful to Reos Partners for giving us this opportunity. And indeed, the next step is to try and get the message out there, get the, you know, a summary or infographics of the scenarios out there. You don't want people to read, of course. You don't want them to read 10 pages. No way, but you want.
They're
but
not going to do it anyway.
You want a 1-minute video to just to shed light on the future, to shaken people up today. This is the plan.
We are also working on a dissemination strategy. We are trying to, plan and program for our possible upcoming events. And, of course, we want to go outside the bubble. I mean, to go outside the buffer zone and try to reach to different segments of the society, the rural parts, you know, of the country, the people who live, what do people think about the future, or do they ever think about the future, you know, in remote parts of this island, for example, or specific groups, you know, what we generally call as marginalized or excluded groups. So we need to widen and deepen the conversation, that's for sure. But of course, it needs a lot of effort, resources.
Can I suggest something? You know what sometimes works? We need short animations.
Yeah.
Because when you've got an animation, which is maximum 2 or 3 minutes, mm-hmm. People are also seeing some, they're not seeing words. When I see a PowerPoint presentation and all they are words, you've lost me. And I'm on a grade of 1 to 10. I'm interested, I'm English speaking, I'm educated, which means if you're losing me, you're really not getting to the... So yes. With one of the regional networks I'm involved with, mediators, they actually do short animations on... UN Security Council Resolution 1325, and it's women and guns and soldiers, and in 2 minutes, you've actually got the picture. So maybe you need to access people within your networks. I know it's possibly going to be done for the glory of doing it because resources are limited. But that's also a possibility if you can think of that.
Yeah, the cliche, a picture speaks 1,000 words, of course, and a video is
absolutely,
even better.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yes.
But an animation is short. You don't want a video more than 2 or 3 minutes because that's the attention span most people have. You lose them after that. Okay, is there anything else you want to say before we close and we tell the listeners where they can access all these the scenarios? The cypressfutures.org, is that the...
Yes, so it's cypressfutures.org.
That is our website.
Mm-hmm. There's a website, there are social media groups.
Yeah,
yep.
I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
Yes, please. They can also follow us on social media. We have accounts on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and a very comprehensive website, cypressfutures.org.
So it's cypressfutures.org.
Yes.
Okay. Anything you want to say before we close? Okay. I think you've said it all, but I think we got to learn to encourage everyone. Find a way within our small circles, even if it is to get more of the leaflets and hand them out.
Yes, so we have done that. We just want, through these conversations, we also talked about the environment. So the plan is not to print out a lot of leaflets, but we can have a lot of material online for people to access it easier in an easy way, an environmental friendly way. And
you can send it by, you can actually send it by email, send the link to your friends. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So hopefully we will manage to do a little bit more dissemination and follow the communication plan and get the conversation starting.
Yeah. We need to desperately. We really need to desperately. Okay, ladies. Well, thank you for being with me today. And we will have further conversations because we need to start we need to carry on this conversation.
Thank you, Magda.
Thank you very much, Magda.
Thank you. And to the listeners, thank you for listening. Have a nice afternoon. Bye.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus. Island Talks. Open. Diverse. Free.